Live from Pirates Cove, where green privateers are given the deep six. It's the Enviro Show on WXOJ LP 103.3 FM, Valley Free Radio, Northampton. Jr. on the phone to talk about the Cape Wind Project that mainstream enviros are attempting to ram down our throats. Hello, Robert.
You're on.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Let me do a brief intro here. Robert, co-host of Ring of Fire, vice chair of Riverkeeper, and Time Magazine's Hero of the Planet, and one of our heroes, is here to talk about the Cape Wind debacle. It's excellent having you on the Enviro Show, Robert. I'm a big fan of yours. And we played your Crimes Against Nature speech you gave at the Commonwealth Club a few years back. I think you made a good case for the Bush regime and the neocons being nothing short of eco-terrorists. So I mentioned to your assistant, Mary Beth, that I've been defending your stand against Cape Wind for some time now. We battle with allies like Greenpeace, MassPerg, Mass Climate Action, et cetera, and a slew of friends and acquaintances. And it's not that much fun, as I'm sure you are well aware of. So I find them using the same tactics that the corporators have used on them all these years, and most of them refuse to step back and even consider the arguments. So my first question to you is, did all these mainstream enviros meet in some smoke-free back room and scheme up the Cape Wind campaign? Who's passing out the Kool-Aid here?
Well, I think you're right. It's just a knee-jerk reaction that if it's wind, it's got to be good. And so they've, I think, ignored their better instincts and training and just bought into the industry's talking points on this issue, which you see recited again and again and again.
Right.
You know, they repeat the same thing that, you know, that Senator Kennedy or myself were trying to stop this project to protect our views from Kyrgyzstan, which of course is dead wrong.
Right.
Nobody has ever said that. It's simply untrue. I got involved in this issue because the commercial fishermen from Menemsha and Chatham and Hyannis, we have some of the oldest commercial fisheries in North America. They're centuries old, and they're an important part of our culture on Cape Cod. They're a critical part of the tourism industry and part of the character of our communities. You've got communities like Menemsha, and they literally, you're not allowed in the harbor to purchase harbor shoreline land unless you're a commercial fisherman, because they're so intent on keeping the commercial fishery viable.
Exactly.
So those fishermen are virtually all going to be wiped out by this project. They're putting the project, they've decided, I'm not against Cape Wind. I'm all for it. I'm all for wind power on the high seas, but not on Horseshoe Shoals. It just shouldn't be there. It's the wrong place for it for a lot of reasons, starting with the commercial fishery. They should move it, you know, 10 miles out deeper into deep water, which is where all the new technology is going. It's where the industry is trending right now. It's what they're doing in Europe. And they should move it out there where it's not going to interfere with this, you know, this highly utilized public trust resource. There's 5 million people a year, boaters and tourists, who use this area. And, you know, to turn it over to a single industrial speculator.
Right, and the point, we've been making that point, too, that these fishing families are, they're working families. And the livelihood depends on that, the commons.
That's right, and 63% of their catch comes from Horseshoe Shoals. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, but it's not just them. It's, if you look at this project, it's just absurd for anybody who goes out there and visits this. And this this reporter, I forget her name, she wrote a book about it. And I, you know, they had me on NPR debating her, and it was just, and then I started looking at the book, and it was clear. She hasn't even been out to Horseshoe Shoals. She has no clue what it's like out there.
Right.
She doesn't know, you know, how heavily used this area is. This is why the ferry companies are against it.
Right.
Highline Ferries, the Steamship Authority, because it's going to disrupt navigation. We have fogs that roll in literally in minutes, where you cannot see the front of a Boston Whaler from the console. And, you know, and there's hundreds of people every day navigating through what's going to be a maze of these giant towers between Menemsha, Edgartown, the ports of Nantucket, and the South Cape ports.
The side of Manhattan Island, right?
Well, you lose an engine, you get washed ashore. We also know now, because of a series of military studies and European studies, that the movement of these blades disrupts marine navigation systems. And what the experts on this say is that the ferry boats will be able to, in thick fogs, will be able to see some of the small boats, the small craft that are in the transportation lanes and the channels, but other ones will be completely invisible to them. So what happens when you're in a soup fog? And a ferry, you know, high-speed ferry is racing down on you and can't see you.
Right.
These are real issues. These are not phony or contrived issues. And this is what happens when you try to turn public trust lands over to a private industrial developer. Now, these are the kind of things Greenpeace, you know, has fought for years and says. It always says, you know, that we fight for the local fishermen. Why are they destroying, in this case, the local fishermen? Why are they ignoring these really important issues about the use of one of the most heavily utilized public trust resources in North America?
Okay, why are they?
You know, it's interesting. That's an interesting question, because in Europe, in Scotland, the Greenpeace is actually fighting a wind farm proposal there for the very reason that we're fighting Cape Wind here. So, Greenpeace Europe has a different take on this issue than the people that we're dealing with here. They're taking exactly polar opposite positions on two virtually identical plants. And what we've said is, you know, there's plenty of good places for wind energy in Massachusetts and on the Cape. Otis Air Force Base, Teddy has said to the promoters here, they need work with them to get them access to Otis Air Force Base.
Exactly.
It'd be a much cheaper development. The wind is slightly lower, but it's much less subsidies for the public.
So Robert, were other sites ever considered, like Otis or any land sites?
You know, the other sites are not being seriously considered because the proponents of this site, this syndicate, which includes General Electric Company and a bunch of wealthy speculators who are financing this project and think that they're going to make a killing, think that they have a political lock on this project because of their ties to the Bush administration and to some of the other senators. They think that they can just force this through. But, you know, and it's a no-bid contract. You know, there's no royalties to the federal government. There's no royalties to the taxpayer. It's just it's a crooked deal, and it is so typical of the kind of crooked deals that developers, industrials have been making for years and that I've been fighting for 24 years. I mean, the only difference between this and dozens and dozens and dozens of other projects that I've fought and stopped where you have industrialists trying to take over the public trust is that it's just a different form of energy. It's wind energy.
Well, but you
have to stop saying no matter where you put wind energy, it's going to be good. I wouldn't put wind energy in Yosemite Park. I wouldn't put it in Central Park. I wouldn't put it on the Boston Commons.
But would you turn wind energy over to private corporations, and particularly private corporations who never have to take any responsibility for what they're doing, who do not even have to bid on it, that it turns a common, something that we have in common, namely the wind, over to a private corporation?
I'm not against that even. I think that, you know, private corporations, if you want to erect a windmill on a farmer's land and exploit the wind energy that's going across that land and pay him rent for it, that's fine. But if you want to go out into the commons, you know, that we all own together.
That's it. That's the point. It's in
this is a publicly, this is 25 square miles. It has a bigger footprint than the city of Boston. And they're all of a sudden privatizing it. It was
right.
A place that was heavily, heavily exploited by fishermen, by boaters, by tourists, by the recreational industry. And all of a sudden, all of those people are going to be pushed aside so that this one fella can make money. And it's not a good deal for the public. He's getting $274 million in free public subsidies because the project makes no economic sense. It could not compete. This energy could not compete in the marketplace against many, many, many more efficient, more environmental forms of energy. And so we're basically throwing money at this guy to make him rich for a project that makes no sense for the public. And that is going to impose huge additional costs, externalities, on the public that, you know, are being just... And anybody who talks about this, anybody who tries to have a conversation about this, is just muddled by, you know, by our friends, people like Greenpeace and people, you know, like Governor Patrick and, you know, the other people who are promoting this project, I think blindly and not intelligently.
Robert, what are some of those externalities that it's going to cost?
So the externalities include the destruction of the commercial fishing industry.
It's
the family-owned fisheries that, you know, are so important. This was one of the original industries in our democracy, and that it enriches not just the palate of Cape Cod, but also the culture of Cape Cod. It's one of the reasons that tourists come here, and it feeds that tourist economy. The recreational fishing industry, and that's why, you know, you have the marina owners, you have all the local merchants, the hotel owners, the marina owners, the commercial fishermen, all opposing this project. The steamship authority, the highline authority, all the local people who actually are familiar with this water body and with the public use of this water body are all against it. And you have, you know, then a national organization, kind of this elitist group from Washington, Greenpeace, who kind of parachutes in on these localities and is, you know, then telling them what they should do with their water and with their land. And, it really is, it's kind of an odd, it really is kind of an odd situation where Greenpeace is actually fighting for a big industrial developer to steal a waterway from the public.
Maybe it's a new form of environmental partnership. I know, but it's really important.
Greenpeace has made a huge strategic mistake in this. And
right.
But why did they make that mistake? That's what I...
I just think it was... I don't think it was anything. I'm not cynical about it. I don't think it was that they were taking money or something. I have no evidence of that. But I think it was just... It's just stupidity. It's just they were blinded by the fact that this is wind, and so it has to be good.
And it's green, yeah.
Right, it's wind, it has to be good. Well, you know, wind is good, but not all wind. You know, you don't want to put wind in, as I said, don't put it on energy. In Yosemite, don't put it on a flyway where it's going to kill birds, you know, huge numbers of birds.
Right.
Or, you know, avian life. And don't put it in a place that, you know, is already generating huge benefits to the public in a way that is going to rob the public suddenly of those benefits.
Right. I guess another externality would be damage from the project if it's ever built, like this 10-story transformer substation. And you want to tell the listeners a little about that?
Yeah, there's it's a half-acre transformer substation that's going to be built in the middle on a giant pier in the middle of Horseshoe Shoals, and it's going to have 40,000 gallons of highly toxic transmission oil that, if it spills, will end up on the and it, you know, ultimately, it always spills, and it's going to, and then they build the boats that take it out there. You know, you could have spills from that. There's also other. There's real danger to shipping. You know, people. As I said, there's 5 million people a year that ride boats through those areas.
Right.
I've been through Horseshoe Shoals on many occasions, including twice this summer when we lost either an engine or a sail. Well, what if you know, we have, typically we have 20 knot, 24 knot, even 30 knot winds on Horseshoe Shoals. And what if you're in the wind like that with high wave conditions and you lose a sail or an engine right next to one of the right upwind or upcurrent of one of these huge turbines? You know, you're going to be smashed against it. As I said, the ferries, here's another issue. The ferries, the Steamship Authority, the commute, and the Highline ferries, the commute between Nantucket and the Vineyard and Hyannis and Woods Hole are going to have to reduce the number of trips and change their route to go around these giant turbines. And it's going to cost each of those companies roughly 400,000 gallons of fuel oil every year extra that they're going to have to burn in order to take routes around the facility. Plus, they're going to have to reduce their trips by one trip a day. Because of the extra, you know, you add 10 minutes, that's what it's going to cost them. And if you add that 10 times a day, at the end of the day, you've lost the trip. And so it's not, you know, that's another externality to the people of Cape Cod, an inconvenience that is going to accrue, you know, in financial benefits to the owner of the facilities, but it's going to penalize quality of life and convenience to the people of Cape Cod.
The executive director of the Marine Mammal Commission stated that there is little doubt that activities associated with the proposed action, the construction of this thing, particularly the use of pile drivers for power construction, will result in the taking of marine mammals by harassment. Can you talk a little about the wildlife, you know, the ramifications to wildlife?
Well, yeah, certainly there's going to be some. I'm most worried about the dredging. I don't think, you know, some environmentalists have worried about the fish, about impacts to fisheries. There may be the fish survival. I think there's probably, you know, maybe some during the dredging and construction phases that you'll have some short-term impacts. I'm not so worried about long-term impacts. You know, I have not seen data, but I assume that, you know, generally structure attracts fish and it creates habitat for fish. And so, you know, I don't worry that much about fisheries disappearing.
Right.
There will be avian impacts. There's huge numbers of shorebirds that migrate and winter through that area, and the turbines are notorious for killing them.
Yeah, isn't there erecting like an industrial wind plant in the eastern Florida a strange idea?
Really, if you had a trade-off between that and, you know, and global warming, the issue of global warming, we need to diversify our energy supply. This is an important renewable. I think we should be supporting wind. You can mitigate or eliminate virtually all of the impact simply by moving this further offshore.
Yeah.
And also, they ought to pay royalties, and there ought to be competitive bidding.
Right.
And all of those things are absent here because of the political rush you have this very, very odd coalition supporting. You know, you have people who are, you know, the Republican, the Bush administration that's trying to punish John Kerry and Ted Kennedy for preserving ANWR by putting this, you know, in Cape Cod. Let me tell you something else. This area was all protected. You know, in 1970, my uncle John Kennedy in the 60s felt that the National Seashore Protection should be extended to all of those waters so that there should never be industrial development on those waters or private development. In 1970, that was accomplished when the state claimed all of those waters as a marine preserve. Then in the early 1980s, you had a Supreme Court decision that said the states could only control lands within 3 miles of their land mass. And what that did was it opened a donut hole over Horseshoe Shoals that was suddenly deprived of that state protection as a marine reserve. And that donut hole, which has been recommended as a federal reserve and is on the list to be preserved permanently, but for a small window of time right now, there was a small donut hole opened in the state marine reserve, and that's why they are able to put these turbines there, because this place was supposed to be protected decades ago, and the people of Massachusetts wanted it protected, and it ought to be protected because it's such an extraordinarily important generator of wealth for all of these communities.
Right. So, but what about the people? What are they saying? Because I'm seeing conflicting polls about people's opinion. You know, people in the Commonwealth, the citizens of the Commonwealth, what their opinion is.
I don't know. I haven't seen any of the polls.
No.
I don't think the polls really mean much because there's such a lot of misinformation about this facility out there that I think on Cape Cod, certainly, the principal sympathy is very, very much against building these facilities. And I think some of it is aesthetic. I think people worry, you know, that instead of looking out on a marine sanctuary, they're going to be looking out, particularly in the evening, when, you know, these towers are 440 feet high. That's as high as the tallest buildings in Boston. There's hundreds of them, and they're going to be spangled from the waterline up to their tips with airport landing lights. So, an airport warning light. So you're going to be looking at something instead of looking at, you know, a pristine marine sanctuary. You're going to be looking at a scene that looks like, you know, LaGuardia Airport. And these are South Cape communities that virtually all of their economy is reliant on the tourist industry. And the tourists want to come to a place that looks fairly wild. So, it's just that is an aesthetics concern that people have up there. Again, my primary concern has been protecting the commercial fishermen of the South Cape.
Right. Well, nobody wants to see an industrial seascape out there. It's a beautiful space. Well, all right, Robert, we're not going to keep it too much longer.
Good to go, because I've got my daughter right here, and I'm in a car going to a speech, and I want to thank you guys for covering this issue and for stimulating the debate on it. You've been great about that. I'm glad I finally got a chance to visit with you on the program.
We are, too. And one final question. When you close the live Earth speech and said you'll see us all in the barricade, which barricade did you have in mind?
Well, you know, the ones against the corporate, the barricade that we erect against the corporate takeover of our democracy.
Thank you, Robert. Have a good trip.
Good to talk to you.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
Well, finally, he did say
great. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's see, what else do we have going on today? We're going to open the phones in a little while and get you guys' opinions on Cape Wind. We're not building a windmill hill. We're just kind of trying to relocate them. So we'll try that. But speaking of uncertain phone calls, later in the show we may get another call from David Kruzma celebrating the finish in the first leg of his Ride for Climate. But first, as always, sound familiar? Yes, it's a nautical theme. Bean Hollow State Beach. A man fishing off isolated Northern California beach was tossed out of his kayak when a great white shark attacked the tiny boat. The fisherman, identified only as Dan, scrambled back onto the kayak and paddled furiously ashore with the help of another boater. The attack left a deep gnaw marks on the boat. The attack occurred Saturday off Bean Hollow State Beach, some 20 miles south of Half Moon Bay, where about 18 kayakers launched around 7 a.m. Saturday before splitting into two groups. Quote, "Everyone had been fishing for a while, for a good 2-3 hours, said John Dale of Foster City, a member of the Kayak Fishermen's Club. From what he told me, basically he was fishing and was adjusting a lure, and all of a sudden he was thrown from his kayak into the water. When he came up, he thought he'd been hit by a boat, but when he looked, the shark was still in front of his kayak, latched on, gnawing on the kayak. He thought about it for a second and decided he'd better get back onto the kayak, even though it was still on the nose of the shark." Dale said the shark released the boat soon after he climbed back in. He was unharmed, but we bet his wetsuit needed laundering. What do we got now? Let's talk about the Cape Wind free-for-all, I think.
We're going to play a tune here.
Oh, this is good. Check this one out.
Yeah. Do you know who this is?
Yes, Robert Lucas. Robert Lucas, yeah. Right. Green Energy Blue.
Here we go.
I'm going to go to the next one.
Welcome back. We're about to start the Cape Wind free-for-all. I thought I'd briefly talk about the... This showed up in the email box on the Arise action list. It's an act relative to the oceans, S-529 in the state senate. And apparently what it's about is dumping the Ocean Sanctuaries Act, which has been around... what, 71, to make things a little more amicable for certain...
like fast track?
So here's the Atlantic and Nantucket Sound's testimony opposing this act, and I'll just read excerpts from it.
Opposing the ocean...
This S-529, an act relative to the oceans. So here's the testimony, part of it, from the Alliance Protect Nantucket Sound. So because the Mass Ocean Sanctuaries Act provides statutory protection for our ocean's natural resources, we, the Alliance Protect Nantucket Sound, as an entity with stewardship responsibilities for Nantucket Sound, have been reluctant to support the act's dissolution and replacement with another act that may or may not provide the same or higher level of natural resource protection. The legislature, in its foresight in 1971, designed 5 regions of state waters as ocean sanctuaries, provided a high degree of protection for those areas. And I think this is what Robert is discussing here. We should not lightly remove the sanctuary terminology and the protective intent that such an identity carries with it, especially when the purpose of the proposed legislation is in part to allow certain types of development that are currently prohibited in state waters to go forward.
Uh-huh.
We believe it's prudent for the legislature to explore updating the existing Mass Ocean Sanctuaries Act and adding an ocean management component to it rather than repealing the law itself. And moving further down the testimony, because we find one of the biggest drawbacks to the proposed bill to be the allowance of what is termed small-scale renewable energy projects. With no definition of what kind of project constitutes so-called small-scale, and with the paucity of local control over such projects. We believe that this provision of the bill could easily subject our coastal waters to a spate of development proposals for energy projects. Such proposals could severely undermine the original intent of the Ocean Sanctuaries Act, aiming to protect designated sanctuaries from any exploitation, development, or activity that would significantly alter or otherwise endanger the ecology or the appearance of the ocean, the seabed or subsoil thereof, as well as create conflict for existing traditional use and commercial fishing. And then I'll just read one more short paragraph. Another vital element of ocean management legislation is to ensure the involvement of local and regional stakeholders with decision makers in determining the use of state-owned waters. Without the strategic input of those who know best how localized characteristics of the ocean sanctuaries and who are likely to be most affected by any new uses, the ability to create an effective, broadly supported plan is reduced. In addition, we propose that any small-scale renewable that is considered is a municipal project.
Exactly.
Now, do you think that this attempt to pass legislation is an attempt to open up the possibility of the wind project? Is it necessary to that, or will the project be able to go ahead without that? Because we talked about that donut hole.
Well, this would be a lot of lubrication for the process. And for future projects.
For future projects, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that this is in response to the opposition that has occurred.
But, at least it's so vague.
The wording of it is so vague.
Intentionally,
yeah.
But it turns, again, it's turning our common resources over to public, to private entities without any necessary public control.
Yeah, and
that's right. Absolutely. Right.
Involvement of all the stakeholders and also, you know, something that is a truly homegrown proposal that has, you know, home rule as part of it.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to Greenpeace, you know, it's interesting to see, far right Kennedy basses that with their new pro-Kaken campaign. So this brings one from the Alliance, again from the Alliance to Protect the Public Sound. This is a response to this Greenpeace media campaign, which is going on TV and radio, especially in the eastern part of the state. And I put this up on the Climate IMC, Media Climate site. It's called Media Campaign Falsely Declares Kate Wynne has cleared hurdles. The international environmental group Greenpeace has embarked on a television and media campaign attacking opponents of Cape Wind that is replete with errors and misstatements while it promotes their project. It falsely claims that it's, quote, being certified as having no significant impact on the marine environment, navigation, safety, and shipping lanes. Close.
What?
Greenpeace, right? Protectors of the whales and the in television ad now being broadcast on local stations, the Greenpeace ad singles out Senator Edward M. Kennedy and Congressman William Delahunt for criticism for their role in challenging the appropriateness of Kaken's chosen location in Nantucket Sound. In claiming widespread support for Kaken, Greenpeace ignores the widespread local opposition to the project on the basis of economic, environmental, and public safety risks inherent in the project. Moreover, the campaign promotes a series of blatantly false statements. One, Greenpeace asserts that Cape Wind has cleared regulatory hurdles for endangerment of the marine environment and public safety. Those issues remain undetermined and won't be settled for a year or longer while the federal minerals management series undergoes its review. Two, Cape Wind has not passed the Commonwealth Environmental Impact Review, as Greenpeace claims in the statement to the media, but has simply satisfied the state with information that they submitted was adequate to begin the state permitting process. And there's all kinds of other hurdles that has to jump. And three, Greenpeace also falsely describes Kaken as having passed the Army Corps review when the Army Corps was released.
Mm-hmm.
No longer the agency in the process. Produced the draft environmental impact report that was heavily criticized by numerous federal agencies, stated. It's also including the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, to further review its worst possible rating of inadequate in the long run. So, thank you.
Well, you know, I really think that somebody ought to be looking more carefully into why Greenpeace has taken the stand. It can't be just massive stupidity. There is something else going on here because they continually claim that they are concerned about the environment as well as about green energy. And those two things are at odds here.
Right. If I was a Greenpeace member, which I'm not, I'd quit. Mm-hmm. So anybody listening out there,
they're up here at the home piece. Better yet, lots of them are telling them why they're doing it.
Yeah.
You're telling them why you're doing it.
Okay, let's open up the phone and see if anyone out there is looking at it.
Anyone listening to the Envirosound
out there? Call 413-585-1033. 413-585-1033. We'd love to hear your opinion on this.
This is like the issues of water and the land here. And all these other things are about taking the commons and giving it over to private corporations. And why Greenpeace would go along with that, I have no idea.
Hey, Gordon. You there?
Yes.
So, is this David Kuzma or is this another David?
No, this is David Kuzma.
How are you out in San Francisco?
That's right. Well, actually, now I'm down in Palo Alto, which is right near San Francisco. And we're done.
You're done. Yay!
Thank you. 5,000 miles across the U.S., 21,000 miles in the last 22 months. Been quite a trip. What a journey.
This is the Ride for Climate for your listeners that haven't heard about it. Tell folks very briefly about the ride and
I was a researcher studying global warming here at Stanford University. I left my job and biked to the southern tip of South America to raise awareness of global warming. And then I flew to Massachusetts. I grew up in Amherst, so my neck of the woods out there.
Right.
And I then biked along another companion from Massachusetts to here, completing a huge loop. You can read all about it at rideforclimate.com. And this is it for now.
So did you have a big celebration?
We did. We had a large group of riders cross over the Golden Gate Bridge together. We gave a little presentation at a party with some friends. And now I'm taking a little time off from biking.
Are you going to go back to school or do research or anything?
I just talked to my old boss, and I'm going to come in and give a talk for them about what I've done. But I think what I'd really like to do is write a book about this experience.
Okay.
And we'll see how it goes. You know, there is discussion. If you go to our website, you'll see this ambitious line drawn across the southern part of the United States.
Right.
Suggesting that we are going to cross the southern U.S. And I think at this point that would be very, very worthwhile just because I think that would be a very good region to talk about global warming. I think we still have a really long ways to go. Places like San Francisco and Boston, people are pretty well informed.
Yeah.
As a whole, I think we in the country have a long ways to go, so I feel like it would be really valuable. Really valuable journey to continue, but for now we're going to take some time off.
Right.
We might start again in January or February after doing some more fundraising and organizing. Now I'm just going to go crash at a friend's place for a few weeks and contemplate what comes next.
Well, you'd be sure to let us know in January if the second leg begins.
Well, yes, we will. Yes, we will for sure. But I definitely think this is an incredibly valuable way to spend, 22 months of my life.
Well, thank you for making the trip.
Really.
We're pleased to have you on the show. It was great connecting with you every few weeks.
Yeah, and reading the blog and watching the videos.
Excellent. Yeah, well, it's always been such a joy to hear from people who have followed along. Because that's really, sort of the goal with the website is to make an interesting story. So you're not only learning about, how global warming will affect the far end of the world, but also kind of just seeing what it's like to cross the continent by bicycle.
Yeah.
And again, if you want to see it, it's rideforclimate.com. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the inspiration, David.
Yeah, and if you're coming back to Amherst for the holidays, stop in. Maybe you can come in the studio.
Hey, well, actually, I am. I'll probably be in Massachusetts for a month, so.
Excellent.
We will see.
Thanks.
Great.
Thank you. Well,
thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Okay. That was great.
Phone lines are still open. If you have something to say about Cape Wind, 413-585-1033.
Well, there's a story in this Vineyard Gazette from September 7th about the electric cable plan of this Cape Wind, which says that the staff report released by the Cape Cod Connect Commission this week gives a decidedly mixed review to the controversial plan to build 130 wind turbines on Horseshoe Shoal. The report finds that Cape Wind's plan to connect the turbines to the land in West Yarmouth through the underwater electricity transmission line meets only 8 of the 32 performance standards set by the commission.
Oh, Bonsi Sai said that that's so shocking.
Well, Mass Audubon has also gotten into the act here by giving provisional support for the project, even though all the beams haven't been pounded. So I sent them a note the other day, and I'd like to read that briefly. As one of the hosts of the Valley Hill Radio's Enviro Show, I find it disturbing that Mass Audubon takes such an ambiguous position on the proposed Cape Wind project. Your preliminary support of the project has been misrepresented by Cape Wind proponents as outright support, and I've not seen any concerted effort on your part to correct this information. Further, I view your challenge, which is a paper that cannot meet and read that on the Mass Audubon website, as a seeming wish to also please those who question the citing of the industrial plant in the Eastern Flyway. You can't have it both ways, Mass Audubon. Why give preliminary support when all the data has yet to be presented and all the environmental impact reports have yet to be filed? I thought Mass Audubon's first priority is the protection of birds that live in or pass through the Commonwealth. Frankly, I'm deeply troubled by what appears to be a political posture on the part of a long revered organization dedicated to preserving and protecting alien wildlife.
What is this political posture? Is everybody getting on the bandwagon that because of Gore's movie and everybody's concerned about climate change, that they have to support any kind of attempt to have any kind of green energy, regardless of what it does to the rest of the
environment? Yeah, that seems to be about it.
This debate, and I'm sure that there were many debates going on when they were damming all the wild rivers in this country, but we're at the same kind of juncture here where, you know, we could lose tremendous wild resources because of, you know, a short-term program to quickly build up, you know, wind power infrastructure without looking at the kind of long-term picture. And that's what we did with dams throughout the country. Now the dams have destroyed native fish hatcheries and recreation and everything else. And a lot of the dams, it's time for them to come out because the reservoirs have silted in and the water quality has plummeted in a lot of areas because of these dams. So I think this is a very similar parallel kind of universe that we're treading into, and we should be very cognizant of the impact that we caused in the past. Yeah, and also, there's coal. I mean, it's completely digging up the whole world in order to get the coal they want to go for. It destroys so much of the environment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, now with mountaintop removal and all that stuff that's happening.
So it's time for people to take a stand on this and to preserve what's left of the commons, because you can't get it back. And I doubt very much whether we can turn this around because the pressure is so strong.
Yeah.
Turn one around. Well, you can't even have to do anything that you can claim is green, that is going to affect the carbon, your carbon footprint, regardless of what it costs, regardless of what the other alternatives are. And that's what it seems to me that Greenpeace and Audubon Society are doing.
Yeah, Greenpeace is greenwashing.
Happened in the past. Mass Audubon, didn't they write off the Oak Grove buffer zone?
Yeah.
But in the background, though, is not static. It's a familiar sound to them.
It's the ocean. Yeah, we are broadcasting from the special edition of the Enviro Show from Nantucket Sound.
It's
a good
edition of the Enviro Show.
Yeah.
So, last call. call, and we want to hear your opinion on case one. Give us a call, 413-585-1033, before we move on.
Yeah, we'll find for another call.
Yeah, we can. Before we move on to bus stop billboard, I had a echo chamber piece, like speaking of a nautical theme here. Appeals to the appeals court overturned a ruling allows Navy to test underwater sonar. This is from the RIST. It's a controversy that keeps on controversy. The U.S. Navy wants to test underwater mid-frequency sonar. Marine advocates say such testing F-stop whales and other marine mammals. Repeat, RIST has been writing about this issue since 1999 and it's never used a headline. Thank you. Anyhow, here we go again. Last month, a federal judge ordered the Navy to stop using mid-frequency sonar off California coast through 2009. On Friday, the federal appeals court took the box in that decision. Quote, the public does indeed have a very considerable interest in preserving our national environment, especially both of the scarce whales, both Judge Andrew Kleinfeld set this out. But it also has an interest in national defense. We are currently engaged in war in two countries. And that's his quote. He left it at that. And RIST adds, and we can't be too careful. What if the whales are working for the terrorists?
Right.
Judge. Let's see. I have one more story. Put that in last call to talk about Kate Flynn, 413-585-1033. It's from, oh yeah, Greenpeace, right? So here's Greenpeace, why Greenpeace and other mass environments should be putting all this effort into energy conservation instead of spreading the
exactly
privatizing the commons.
Yep.
So check this out. Hope scheme for measures to serve energy. It's from the New York Times. And this, by the way, folks, is our Enviro Show Echo Chamber segment. The prospect of a comprehensive energy package emerging from Congress this fall is rapidly receding, held up by technical hurdles and policy disputes between the House and Senate within the party. This summer, both houses passed major bills meant to promote energy efficiency and wean industries from fossil fuels. The bills have gaping differences that are supposed to be resolved in a conference committee. Democrat leaders both chambers have signaled that the conference committee members are unlikely to be named until late October at the earliest. Others suggested that leaders may try to resolve the differences in the bills without convening the conference, which could create other problems, including the threat of Republican filibuster. And then moving on, the mileage standard appears only in the Senate bill, having been squelched in the House by John Dingell of Michigan, friend of Dingell. The mandate for renewable power is just in the House bill, having failed in the Senate. Ordinarily, House and Senate leaders appoint conferees to reconcile bills, but because the Senate and the House passed entirely different bills, not simply different versions, one or both chambers will have to pass the other's bill before it can be conferenced.
But you know, the corporations who have all these years been fighting and dying to get us deregulated on everything are now beginning to say, well, maybe they need a little regulation in order to protect their markets.
Yeah,
It's a sick time, you know.
Bad times. But good times here in the Valley because there's a million things going on. So we move on to the bus stop billboard. And we'll start with
today, September 18th, 30 p.m.
If you're anywhere near Greenfield Community College, you can see the renewable workshop on wind power put up by CEP. And then Wednesday, September 19th, cast your vote to restore constitutional protection during the national calling to Congress for the habeas corpus for the Fourth Amendment. Go to www.brdc.org for all the things in the and if you'd like our website, please, go to 224-3121. Friday, October 21st, 10 Friday at 4:30 p.m. on WMUA 91.1 FM and on this station, 7th at 8 a.m. Writer's Voice, a forum on the air on local corporate control of water. Nestle Corporation is considering building a new bottling plant somewhere in Massachusetts. I wonder where. Could be one of your plans. Spend the hour live with Alan Sintow, author of Thirst, Fighting the Corporate Theft on Water. Sintow produced the film, the documentary film Thirst, and was there on TV. Call 413-545-3691. That's the MUA calling line during the show. They want to hear your feedback, and that's Friday, September 21st, 4:30 p.m. Thursday, September 20th, 8 p.m., there is a lecture at Smith College at the Mason Library Browsing Room about water. A lecture by Margaret Kathy Carson, Chair of Global Water Partnership and Commissioner of Water for the 21st Century. Sponsored by the Population Program of the Massachusetts Chapter of the Sierra Club.
I've never heard of Margaret, and I don't know who's the commissioner of.
Any questions?
Yeah,
I have a question. Call 413-695-5968. Monday, September 24th, 7:30 p.m., the environment as a catalyst to peace in the Middle East. At UMass Center, Campus Center, room 165, free and open to the public. And Wednesday, September 25th, 6:30 p.m., renewable workshop on solar power. This is at the Berkshire NSC. That costs $10. Contact Cynthia Haig at CGT Online. That's the CGT thing, so you can go to their website. Tuesday, September 25th. Oh, guess who's at the UN? George Park.
Yes,
and a group of activists in New York City, such as Code Pink, Wolf, WRL, ACT UP, are coordinating what is hoped to be several days of anti-war events and actions to protest with Bush's annual visit to address the UN General Assembly. And doesn't George seem to be doing the same little song and dance that he did prior to the invasion of Iraq?
It's time for Iran.
Yes. For information, call 917-776-4927. That's Tuesday, September 25th at the UN. Sunday, September 30th at 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., Pioneer Valley Relocalization Workshop at the North End. And it's at the March. Call 256-1157. Saturday, October 6th, 10 to 4 p.m., Greenville. Open house presented by Nessie. And you can go to their website to check that out. Finally, October 20th to the 22nd, no war, no warming. Big action in D.C. Go to www.nowarnowarming.org. All right.
All right. And we're out of here.
Next up is the Hilltown Family Variety Show. Next week at this time is our sister show, Farm to Fork. Saying goodnight.
And if you're going to be saying see you in 2 weeks, then this is being both for us.
We're going to go out with that.
We're over time, so we're not going to play anything.
We're not going to play anything.
We're just signing off.
Say that again, Gene. What you just said.
Just want to say, stop takeover of our commons, of what belongs to us, including the air.
All right. Adios.